Next, I want to look at the individual sections on the P11D and at what exactly has to be reported. The first section is Section A, and this covers any assets transferred to an employee or director, including perhaps company cars, any property, goods or other assets which are transferred to an employee. Here we are required to report the market value of any company asset transferred at the date of the transfer of the asset. This general rule applies if the asset sold or transferred was a car or any other asset that had never been provided as a benefit in kind, for example, second-hand office furniture. However, if the asset transferred was previously available to the employee as a benefit in kind, the cash equivalent then becomes the higher of the market value of the asset at the date of transfer, or the cost or market value of the asset when it was first supplied for benefit purposes. We can, however, deduct any sums already taxed on the use of the asset. We need to differentiate between goods purchased by the employer and any goods that might be manufactured by the employer. The cost to be reported for goods that are purchased by the employer would be the price paid for the goods, and if there was any add-on costs incurred in providing the goods to the employee, that would also be added to the actual cost. In contrast, we have to use the marginal cost of production, most often taken to be the wholesale price, where the goods are manufactured by the employer. That excludes any profit element, which would otherwise be reflected in perhaps a substantially higher retail price. Awards of readily convertible assets are not reportable on Form P11D, and they attract pay-as-you-earn and Class 1 NICs. The next section is Section B, which deals with payments made on behalf of the employee. Here we have to report details of any payments made by the employer on behalf of the employee. For example, the settlement of the employee's home telephone bill or a credit card bill, or any school fees paid by the employer that was discussed in the first part of the P11D podcast. Also included here will be the amount of any tax deductible on notional payments which was not immediately borne by the director or employee and then not made good within the statutory 90-day period. This is a problem that can occur where a director or employee receives share option benefits and doesn't have sufficient salary to allow the employer to recover the tax that's due and has to be paid over to HMRC. Pay-as-you-earn should have been applied to any employment income provided in the form of a cash voucher or readily convertible asset or vouchers and credit tokens used to acquire such assets or if they are readily convertible themselves. Let's move on. Section C, which is vouchers and credit cards. Here we have to report any expense incurred in the provision of vouchers, including season tickets, which are capable of being exchanged for money, goods or services. And again, any additional expenses incurred in providing the benefit. So we have to give details of all expenses and other payments made, but not those made in connection with cars, which are covered by the scale charge. We can exclude the value of any vouchers in which pay-as-you-earn has been operated, and this might be luncheon vouchers, where the excess over the 15 pence a day exempt amount is put through the payroll. Remember that vouchers are liable to Class 1 national insurance contributions unless they're exempt, and therefore that Class 1 should have been paid by the 19th of April statutory deadline, otherwise an interest charge is running at this time. We do not have to report the first £55 per week of any qualifying childcare vouchers provided by the employer, and therefore we only have to report any excess. So if an employer was to give £100 a week in childcare vouchers, we would be reporting the £45 a week, not the £100. We move on to one of the difficult areas for reporting, and that's living accommodation. The provision of living accommodation is a taxable benefit on all employees, not just P11D employees, so that's regardless of what they earn. It is reportable on the form P9D as well. This is where the P11D working sheet number 1 provided by HMRC can be quite useful to help us calculate the cash equivalent of the benefit. This again is one of those benefits that's not based on the cost basis of charge. We have two types of charge for living accommodation. The basic charge is based on the greater of the annual gross rateable value of the property, or indeed the rent paid by the employer. And from that, we deduct any rent paid by the employee. The benefit can be prorated if the accommodation is only available for part of the year. We then have a second charge, what's called the additional charge, which arises on property costing more than £75,000. And of course, that limit's been there for a long time, and £75,000 is not much for a property nowadays. We also have to take into account the cost of any improvements to the property measured from the next tax year after the expenditure was incurred. The additional charge will not apply if the basic charge is already based on the open market rental value. The excess over £75,000 is converted into an annual rent by multiplying that excess figure by the official rate of interest at the beginning of the tax year. Now, for 2008-09, the tax year started off with an interest rate of 6.25%. If we had a property which cost £375,000, take off the excess of £75,000 and charge £300,000 at 6.25%, we'd have a benefit to be reported of £18,750. As I've already said, use the working sheet and that will help you get through it. The value of any exempt accommodation doesn't have to be reported, and to be exempt it has to be job-related, such as a house or flat occupied by, say, a caretaker of a school, policeman in a police house. The exemption applies if it is necessary for the proper performance of the employee's duties that he or she should reside in the accommodation. Another exemption is where the property is provided for the better performance of the duties, and here it has to be customary in the industry for employers to provide accommodation. The final exemption is where there's a special threat to the employee's security, and it's only the security exemption that can apply to a director of a company. But one very important point on P11D reporting where live-in accommodation is involved is the question of other reportable benefits. Even if a property is exempt because it's job-related accommodation, there may be other P11D reporting requirements in respect of any cost of light and heating met by the employer, costs of repairs and decorations, if they're costs that would normally be met by the employee or the tenant, if the employer provides furniture, there would be the use of asset tax charge based on 20%. So these additional benefits need to be taken into account if you've got any live-in accommodation to be reported on the P11D. The next section on the P11D is Section E, and this covers mileage allowance payments and passenger payments. We do have a working sheet, number 6, which can help us with this, but it's fairly straightforward. We have to report the excess over and above the authorised mileage rates. Now, I'm sure most of the listeners will know that the authorised mileage rates are 40p per mile for the first 10,000 business miles and 25p a mile for any business mile after 10,000 miles. If an employer were to be paying 25 pence a mile for every business mile, there could be nothing to report because there'd be no excess. In contrast, if an employer was to pay 50 pence a mile for business mileage and an employee's own car, then for the first 10,000 miles, there'd be an excess of 10p a mile that had to be reported. And for any mileage over 10,000, there'd be an excess of 25 pence to be reported. Again, you can use the working sheet to help you with that. Passenger payments also included here, but the fact is that not many employers pay allowances to their employees for passengers travelling in the car. If they are paid, then the passenger payments will not have to be reported if they're limited to 5p per mile per passenger and providing its necessary business mileage.